The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is John Ivey for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Sports Illustrated for Kids. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the September-October issue of Sports Illustrated for Kids. And we're going to begin today on page 7 and 8 with Who's Who in Sports, the second line. We have Grace Lyons, Oklahoma Sooners shortstop. Grace is 5'7". She was born October 17, 1999, and her hometown is Peoria, Arizona. Grace finished the season with a career-high 23 home runs and a .401 batting average as Oklahoma went 59-3 and won the Women's College World Series. In the final game, Lyons put the finishing touches on a 10-5 win with a 3-run homer in the sixth. She was named first-team All-American and was the Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year. Did you know, though, that Oklahoma has now won 6 national titles in softball? Only UCLA with 12 and Arizona 8 have won more. Next, we have Jose Ramirez, Cleveland Guardians third baseman. His height is 5'9". His weight is 190 pounds. He was born September 17, 1992, in his hometown, Boni, Dominican Republic. Through 104 games, Ramirez was hitting .284 and slugging .553 while leading the American League in doubles with 36. He has finished in the top six in MVP voting 4 times in his career. And in 2016, he hit .312 as Cleveland came within 1 game of winning the World Series. But did you know Cleveland changed its nickname to the Guardians before the 2022 season? The name refers to a pair of statues that sit on the city's Hope Memorial Bridge. And finally, we have Gabriel Slonina, Chicago Fire goalkeeper. His height is 6'4". His weight is 194 pounds. He was born May 15, 2004, in his hometown, Addison, Illinois. At 17 years and 81 days, Slonina became the youngest goalkeeper in Major League Soccer history when he made his debut on August 4, 2021. He was just 14 when signed with the Fire. In 2022, he kept 10 clean sheets in Chicago's first 24 games, which was tied for second most in the league. But did you know, in the new year, Slonina will join Chelsea. The Premier League side paid a transfer fee of $10 million this summer to secure his services and agreed to loan him to the Fire for the rest of the Major League Soccer season. Continuing with the different stadiums and the official home away from home. Chicago Stadium, Chicago Bears. Several circumstances of the Chicago Bears' 1932 championship game against the Portsmouth Spartans don't square with the modern image of the NFL. It was the first playoff game in NFL history, as the league actually had a rule against postseason contests. The 1932 season ended in a tie thanks to an equally wacky regulation that determined the standings based on winning percentage, excluding ties. And to avoid the wintry conditions at Wrigley Field, the game was moved to the Blackhawks Chicago Stadium. The Madhouse on Madison was not a football venue, to put it mildly. Most of the punts pelted the spectators, including one that hit the organist. 34 years before the introduction of AstroTurf, the field also didn't fare well. And there wasn't that much of it to begin with, being only 60 yards long between goal lines. Given the shortened field and the proximity of the stands, field goals were totally out of the question. Despite that rule, however, the Bears managed to win 9-0, thanks to a touchdown and a safety, putting the temp in Tempe. The Arizona Coyotes inspired this feature by moving into Arizona State University's Mullet Arena, a multi-purpose facility that can seat only 5,000 fans. And they could be there through the 2025-26 season as they try to get a new arena built. It's an odd arrangement that figures to combine the intimacy of the Liberty's stay at Radio City Music Hall with the potential for enemy fan takeovers like the Chargers witnessed in StubHub Center. In all fairness to the Yotes, however, they're not the only ones making the best of a short-term situation. Hawaii football will play the 9,000-seat Ching Athletics Complex after Aloha Stadium was condemned. And Barcelona will be in the city's Olympic Stadium next year while Camp Nou undergoes renovations. Neither situation, however, figures to be as surreal as Arizona's. StubHub Center, Los Angeles Chargers. Here's one you'll probably remember. The Los Angeles Chargers crashed at the StubHub Center, now Dignity Health Sports Park, from 2017 to 2019 while SoFi Stadium was under construction. It wasn't a mismatch by the standard of the 1932 NFL championship game or even the Arizona Coyotes' current situation. But the venue is soccer-specific, made for the LA Galaxy and able to hold 27,000 fans per game, well short of the 60,000-plus held in every other NFL stadium at the time. The Rams had beat the Chargers to town and had staked claim to the LA Memorial Coliseum. Exacerbating the situation was the lack of Chargers fans in L.A. So, for a while, visiting teams with large national fan bases could pack the crowd. When Young Ho Koo booted a potentially game-winning field goal for the Chargers against the Dolphins in 2017, the crowd went wild for the miss. Skydome, Toronto Raptors. While Chicago Stadium was too small to hold an NFL game, the Sky Dome in Toronto, now the Rogers Center, proved almost too big for basketball. The Raptors played there for their first 3.5 seasons while a more appropriate venue could be built. The Sky Dome, the Blue Jays ballpark, brought a court right up along first base line seats. Then three seats of temporary bleachers went up that would normally be second base, short right field, and home plate. Fans in those bleachers had a good view, but anyone in an upper deck of the permanent seating had to bring binoculars for the views that weren't obstructed. Isn't it not a basketball facility? It's just not. The fans are too far away. It's too big, and it's not a good atmosphere for basketball, said the Raptors' Tracy McGrady after the team's final game in the stadium. This place is so dead, you can't hear everybody in the stands talking. The Raptors actually won that game with a young McGrady and a rookie Vince Carter leading the way. Still, there was no nostalgia for McGrady as they left. This place is one of the worst. What if? What if these stars reverse roles? So we have here on page 22 these animated pictures of different ones of Charles Barkley. Well, actually, it's all Barkley. And that, and I took that personally. Shows him playing his sneakers, his number 34 in his Sixers uniform. And then another Sixers uniform, red one. And then an article, Barkley wins all, Philadelphia NBA champs again. Bugs Bunny, Charles Barkley, Space Jam. Now remember the title, What If These Stars Reverse Roles? Ancient riddle, if a free tree falls in a forest and no one is around to hear it, does it make a sound? Modern riddle. If a shortstop gets 3,000 hits in Kansas City and no one watches him on national TV, does he make the Hall of Fame? Manny Ramirez raised this question in June when he said on a Red Sox broadcast, it's like if you put Jeter in Kansas City in those years, he was just a regular player. Perhaps Ramirez picked on Jeter out of jealousy. The former Yankees captain recently made the Hall of Fame. Ramirez has fallen well short of induction 6 times, likely due to multiple performances-enhancing drug suspensions. Maybe he meant it as a backhanded compliment. The Red Sox legend also said, you got to understand this. If you haven't played in Boston or New York, you're not in the big leagues. Or perhaps the soundbite, like so many of his misadventures in left field, was just Manny being Manny. What if, well, whatever the case, he kind of sort of has a point. Kansas City Jeter would still be an impressive player. Any middle infielder with 3,465 hits makes it to Cooperstown. Consider, however, another famous shortstop from the 1990s, Barry Larkin. He had an 815 career OPS and 70.5 career WAR. Jeter had 8.17 OPS and 7.1 WAR. They were statistically identical during their playing days, but not in retirement. Larkin received 51.6% of votes during his first year on the Hall of Fame ballot. Jeter got 99.8%. Swap Larkin and Jeter, and the Yankees probably still win those championships. But then do the Reds become a title contender? Circumstances definitely play a role in an athlete's legend. How much depends a lot on the sport and the individual. Round mound of renown. I can't write more than 400 words of slightly less than laudatory Jeter coverage before the angry emails start to pour in. So consider the NBA, a league in which championships have an even bigger impact on legacy and individual players have a bigger impact on championships. Probably the most famous ringless hooper of all time is Charles Barkley, mainly because Shaquille O'Neal brings it up every 5 minutes on Inside the NBA. Sir Charles spent 8 seasons on the Philadelphia 76ers before getting traded to the Phoenix Suns. Despite believing it was their destiny to win in 93, he ran into the buzzsaw of Michael Jordan's Chicago Bulls dynasty in the finals. Many of Jordan's contemporaries lived in his shadow. But to quote Jordan's own Hall of Fame speech, "All of the videos, you never just saw me. You saw Scottie Pippen." Let's imagine a radically different 1984 NBA draft. The Trailblazers take Jordan at number 2 instead of center Sam Bowie. Portland already had one all-star shooting guard, Jim Paxson, blocking a future Hall of Famer at the same position, Clyde Drexler. Jordan and Drexler, who have been asked about this particular what-if a bazillion times, have both said they could have made it work. Trailblazers forward Michael Thompson, dad of Clay, has said they could have had a 15-year dynasty. But Portland clearly thought it had enough guards and not enough size. Maybe Jordan and Drexler don't gel. Maybe they do. But the Trailblazers manage only a couple of championships instead of a middle multi-decade reign. That might be enough of a window for a 76ers team that drafted Charles Barkley and potential guard John Stockton in the first round instead of Barkley and point guard Leon Wood. How does Jordan, Drexler, Thompson measure up to Stockton, Barkley, Moses, Malone? Please, don't answer that. The only people more defensive than Jeter fans are Jordan GOAT truthers. And we have some pictures here on page 23. Call of the Coyote. Austin Matthews is a star in Toronto, but a beloved native son of Arizona, a market in need of a hero. And baseball royal. We already knew Derek Jeter looked good in blue, but this snap from the 2012 All-Star game in Kansas City makes it easier to imagine Manny Ramirez's scenario of the captain just being a regular guy on the Royals. Still seems unlikely. Big fish in a bigger desert. I've offended Yankees fans and Jordan fans. Time to aim higher. The entire country of Canada. The trick in imagining a player moving from a big market to a small market in hockey is figuring out which is which. The 7 franchises in Canada have, on average, much more engaged fan bases. The United States is a much larger country. When the Oilers traded Wayne Gretzky to the Kings in 1988, commentators acted as if Jeter had moved from Kansas City to New York. The reason was simple. More people live in California than all of Canada. Gretzky's star power ensured a loyal following in Edmonton, but it could ignite a massive new fan base in the United States. In fact, an even more extreme version of the Gretzky phenomenon may be on the horizon. The Toronto Maple Leafs are the undisputed most popular hockey club in the world. Their franchise player is Austin Matthews, who this past season became the first 60-goal scorer in a decade. It's arguably the greatest marriage of talent and market size in NHL history. The Arizona Coyotes are the NHL's least popular team. This issue contains four pages inspired by the Coyotes' inability to hang on to their own arena. Matthews grew up a Coyotes fan. He's not just a United States superstar in Canada, he's an Arizona-raised United States superstar of Mexican descent. Matthews going home would be the hockey equivalent of moving from the Los Angeles Dodgers to the Toledo Mud Hens. Yet it would let him emulate another Toronto superstar, Canadian Dominican slugger Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and become a hometown hero beloved in three different North American nations. Maybe that's the aspect of Derek Jeter playing in Kansas City that Manny Ramirez underrated. Jeter grew up in the Midwest. Maybe he'd have made fundamental baseball as synonymous with America's heartland as cornfields and the Great Lakes. New riddle. If a coyote howls in the desert and no one's around to hear it, what sound does it make? 2 million Canadians gnashing their teeth. Hoo-hoo. Sports Illustrated. Photo shoot. Indianapolis running back Jonathan Taylor. Fast facts. After the 2,000-yard season at Wisconsin, then narrowly missed a third by 23 yards, Taylor was drafted by the Colts in 2020. He ran for 1,169 yards as a rookie, and last year upped that mark to 1,811, which led the league and set a franchise record. Taylor averaged 5.5 yards per carry and scored an NFL-high 18 touchdowns. And number two on our Fast Facts list is Connor McDavid, Edmonton Oilers center. Fast Facts. Last season, McDavid led the NHL in points for the fourth time in his seven-year career. He scored a personal best 44 goals and added 79 assists. McDavid was also the top scorer in the playoffs, notching 33 points as Edmonton advanced to the Western Conference Finals. He was second in voting for the Hart Trophy MVP, which he has won twice. SI Kids Treehouse number 16. Future Shock. Can we see all the cast of characters here? And we're going to begin with, we see a advertisement for the kids' newsroom. Something must have gone wrong in the time travel portal. I'm in heaven. Well, maybe not heaven. Mr. Beamer, over here. Oh, venerated founder, you honor us with your presence. Welcome to the year 3022, and we've been expecting you, sir. You have? Of course. Your time with us is mentioned in your memoir, Buzzwords, published in 2067. It's required reading for all 986,000 employees located at each of our 172 Galactic Treehouse locations. Well, good to see standards having slipped, though I notice you didn't get my hair exactly right. Now that you're here, we can fix that. No problem. Hurry. There's much we want to show you, and only hours until Whitney achieves the breakthrough that returns you to your time. Moving on. I guess the old clay versus grass court debate is over. Pong, pong. Tennis in your time was limited by your inability to reduce gravity. Great shot, Mr. Beamer. History tells us that your pitchers relied on their fingers to create spin on the ball, as they hadn't unlocked the full powers of the human mind. Is the ball at a good height for you to hit, sir? Yeah, though I have a feeling you grooved this pitch. We no longer need to divide the field with lines thanks to our control of the spontaneous microclimates. Mr. Beamer, sir, it would be my honor to offer you my coat before you cross onto this colder side of the field. Aren't you supposed to try to take the ball from us? I'm starting to think you guys are going easy on me. Oh, I'm so sorry if we have offended you, sir. Our sports must seem strange to you, and we merely wanted you to enjoy yourself. Please, stop calling me sir. I always thought I wanted my staff to show me more respect, but it's not so fun being coddled. I think I'd have more fun sitting in the stands watching you go all out. As you wish, Bubs. Toe with the soccer ball. Thanks for a great show. I'll be happy to return to my time, though where everyone else's mind are as advanced as mine. It has been an honor. We've been waiting this day for a long time. Yoink! And someone pulls him back. Finally, do you know how long it took you to get you back? Next time you jump through a strange portal, we're just going to leave you wherever you end up. Honestly, it was quiet around here with him gone. I missed you guys, too. Next, looks like we're going to be talking about some football. I see a picture of here, Bengals quarterback Joe Burrows. Tanking, trading, drafting, having a lot of money. In the Big Four men's sports, there are plenty of ways to put together a title-worthy team, but none of them are easy, and they're certainly not foolproof. Game plans. NFL, if you want to win, you need a quarterback. How you get him is a whole other question. Here we see on page 25, picture of Joe Burrows, Cincinnati Bengals, wide receiver, Chase, number one. Just 4 years ago, Joe Burrow was living a pretty normal existence. Sure, he was a quarterback for a major college football program, LSU, but it's not like he was being mobbed by fans everywhere he went. He'd been a backup at Ohio State before transferring to LSU. When he walked from Tiger Stadium across the street to his car, it was a peaceful stroll. A year later, that same walk became so perilous that Burrow considered hiring a full-time bodyguard. The reason was simple. LSU was in the midst of a national title run, and when something like that happens, the focus of the fans always turns to one player, the quarterback. It is definitely the most important position in football, and arguably the most important in all of sports. In the modern NFL, a team without an elite quarterback has no chance to win the Super Bowl. The quarterbacks who have done it recently are among the best who have ever played. Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning, Drew Brees. Even the teams who have been able to win without a future Hall of Famer under center have relied on a quarterback having a monster season, such as Carson Wentz of the Eagles, 2018, Joe Flacco of the Ravens, 2013. So after Burrow's senior season in which he threw for 60 touchdowns and just 6 interceptions and won the Heisman Trophy, the Bengals jumped at the chance to select him with the first pick of the draft. Two roads. Since he drafted Burrow's on the right while the Rams gave up a package of picks and a quarterback to get Stafford, NFL continued. Burrow was immediately hailed as a savior in the title-starved Cincinnati. He tried as hard as he could to stay grounded and out of the spotlight. He kept up a routine in which he had a regular video game night with his old friends from Athens, Ohio, as they played Star Wars Battlefront 2 on Xbox Live. Burrow was just one of the guys. His buddies had no problem poking fun at him, reminding Burrow that in their eyes he wasn't an NFL superstar. They'd adopt a goofy voice and say, "Oh, look at me, big Mr. Quarterback." But as Cincinnati's fortunes improved on the field, it became harder for Burrow to be anything but Mr. Quarterback. Heck, even the kicker was appearing on billboards last year. So you can imagine how hard it was for Burrow to go outside without being mobbed. So close. Just 1 year after a 4-win season, Cincinnati and Burrow came within 85 seconds of the franchise's first Super Bowl victory. The Bengals' season culminated with a run to Super Bowl 56, just the third time the franchise had reached the big game. They lost to the Rams 23-20, but their performance sent a message that Cincinnati is going to be a handful for years to come. Burrow's star turn in his second season more than just justified the team's decision to take him first. Cincinnati was able to build a system that allowed him to shine. Burrow is an incredibly accurate passer with a quick release, so the Bengals installed a spread offense that gave him just enough time to deliver the ball to an open receiver. Protection was an issue. Burrow was sacked 70 times last year, counting the postseason. Trading for a quarterback. The team Burrow and his Bengals lost to in the Super Bowl 56 took the opposite path to finding its quarterback. The Rams went out and got him. Los Angeles tried the draft and nurture method, selecting Jared Goff first in 2016, sacrificing two first-round picks to move up to get him. Goff was solid in his first three seasons, but began to slide in 2020 as the Rams' defense flourished. Meanwhile, in Detroit, the Lions' longtime quarterback Matthew Stafford, below the top pick in the 2009 draft, decided to change of scenery would benefit both parties. So Detroit traded him to the Rams for Goff, two first-round picks and a third-rounder. The price Los Angeles paid was heavy, but the deal made sense. The Rams were on the verge of Super Bowl contention and needed an upgrade at quarterback. Would the same deal have made sense for, say, the 6-11 Bears? No, because they need to so much more than a quarterback, and giving away draft capital would make it harder to build a roster. Acquiring an elite quarterback is not easy. Teams that have them aren't likely to give them up. When one becomes available, it's used because the player and his team feel like they've gone as far as they can. In 2020, Tom Brady decided he'd done enough for the Patriots and became a free agent. He signed a two-year deal worth at least $50 million guaranteed with a team at the cusp of contention, the Buccaneers. That underscored another difficulty in acquiring a star signal caller. It's expensive, but it pays dividends as Tampa won the Super Bowl in Brady's first season. We've run out of time for today's episode. Sports Illustrated for Kids. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm John Ivey, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Sports Illustrated for Kids is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.